a session on why gratitude helps kids cope with crisis, and the fact that we're in the midst of all surviving, trying to survive this pandemic with a major change to everything in our lifestyle. Hopefully it is a timely topic that will help us. My name is Dr. Dave Walsh. For those of you who don't know me, with my daughter, I am one of the co-founders of Spark and Stitch Institute, and I've been working in the area of parenting education for many years, and happy to be doing this with my daughter, Erin.
Yeah, and we have worked together to translate brain science into what we hope is practical strategies to better understand what's going on inside of our kids so that we can raise more courageous and connected kids. And so, you know, this is the third in what we're calling our Spark Insight series. As we're all doing so much juggling, whether you're working on the front lines and still out in the field during this pandemic, or whether you are doing this incredible act of juggling parenting and work at home, we're really grateful to have this Spark Insight series where we can at least reach out and stay connected virtually. And this is the third in the series. We'll let you know how to catch the first two if you're new to these little sessions. But in past workshops or past short sessions, we've said, you know, when we started Spark and Stitch Institute, we talked about this idea of how important it was to parent for courage and connection. And it's really clear during this pandemic that also parenting in this moment requires a lot of courage and connection. And in some ways, we are kind of creating a new parenting toolkit as we go, whether you are wearing your educator hat or your parent hat here in this session. We are trying to find creative ways to better understand our kids and to equip them to handle some of the stress, the overwhelm, and the uncertainty of this moment. And we're not just creating new toolkits from nothing, though. Sometimes we draw on rituals, traditions, activities that we maybe leaned on well before the pandemic. And as my dad and I were preparing for this session, Why Gratitude Helps Kids Cope with Crisis, we were thinking a little bit about some of the pre-pandemic ways that our family has centered gratitude. So we thought we'd start with that and then kind of unpack it together to get at the why now and how do we do it? What can gratitude do for us? So Dad, you want to talk a little bit about what pre-pandemic life looked like in the Walsh family.
Yeah, this is a photo, obviously a little bit warmer weather and clearly pre-pandemic. This is one of our Sunday dinners in which we are celebrating a birthday at the same time. One of the rituals that that we have in our family, and I started this when Erin and her two brothers, who had been living in various parts of the world, about a decade ago, all moved back to Minneapolis at about the same time. And my wife and I decided, well, let's take advantage of this. And so we instituted something called family dinner Sunday night. There's no obligation to be there, but it's an opportunity for us to connect and catch up on a weekly basis. And one of the things, one of the rituals is that when it's someone's birthday, and there's 15 of us when you count the kids, partners, and grandkids, is to express gratitude about the person whose birthday that we're celebrating. And it's become a meaning ritual for our family. It doesn't always necessarily go according to textbook, right, Erin?
Yeah, so we thought, you know, in this half hour that we're going to spend talking about gratitude, we want to make sure that one of the main messages we get, whether you're an educator or a parent, is that gratitude doesn't always look pretty. And we don't have to think of it only as an idyllic practice. This still photo of the Walsh family, of course, makes it look delightful. And there's plenty for us to be grateful for. We have food, we have caring relationships, we feel safe. But there's all kinds of things, of course, that are not pictured in that tradition. So we have children ranging from 5 up in, up until like sort of preteen. And not every time that they open their mouth to express gratitude does something come out that sounds really delightful. Oftentimes the kids just say, I don't want to, or I pass. I think there was, Dad, wasn't there a year where like every child just said Goldie Gopher, like every time we asked what they were grateful for, which is the mascot of the University of Minnesota.
I think that I do recall that. Yep.
So sometimes we are breaking up food fights in between, right? So gratitude is certainly something that we as a family continue to draw on as we think about how does this sort of pre-pandemic ritual translate today. But there's all kinds of things that sort of feel less than ideal. When we look at, think about gratitude and a thank you card, it sounds like this very, very beautiful practice. But as we ground it in our current moment, I think one of our goals here today is to talk about what it can do for us, what it can do for our children, but how do we make sure that we stay real and that we talk about the things that aren't pictured on Instagram or on Pinterest that sometimes can make us feel like, oh yeah, well, we tried that, or but it didn't work. Or where we start to say, well, my kids are really ungrateful, because the way that we think gratitude should unfold, it doesn't look like that. And so let's start by talking a little bit about, what some of the challenges to finding gratitude or expressing gratitude in crisis are. Now, this is the third in a series. The first Spark Insight session we did 2 weeks ago was all about stress and overwhelm and the many faces of stress in children and adolescents. And that stress can show up in really challenging and kind of unpredictable ways, which sometimes seem at odds with gratitude. So we're not going to take a deep dive. You can go back and watch that recording. But Dad, just a reminder of the sort of emotional context that we are experiencing ourselves as we navigate stress and that our children are experiencing as they navigate uncertainty.
To say that this is a time of stress is probably a tremendous understatement. We are all having, major lifestyle changes that we have to do simply to kind of keep safe so that, that photo, that picture of our family dinner, we haven't been able to do that now for a couple of months as we are in kind of social distancing and lockdown. And so we have to give up things that are important to us, it can really create a lot of stress. And, it would be nice if we could all say, well, I'm feeling stressed and, I need a little extra space, a little extra patience. But oftentimes, it doesn't come out so clearly as that. It comes out sideways. And so there are many faces of stress for both our kids and for ourselves. And sometimes it can come out through kind of humor. Sometimes stress manifests itself by people kind of going in opposite directions, just kind of leave me alone, irritable, volatility, anger. And so stress has many faces that it can come out. And people have shared with us when we talked about this in a little bit more detail a couple weeks ago, people talked about some of their kids just kind of becoming very apathetic and didn't really want to engage in anything. Other kids went the other direction toward perfectionism and kind of overactivity. And of course, stress can really have an impact on one of the three basic building blocks that contribute to our health, which is adequate sleep, eating a healthy diet, and kind of a stable mood. And those things can all be greatly impacted by stress. And so, sometimes when we want to support other family members in stress, it's a little bit hard when it's actually trying to help someone like a porcupine. It's prickly. And so it can be challenging to how to support one another and how we ourselves can get support when we're under stress. And so that's where we think gratitude can be one of the things that can help us.
Yeah, and then, when we talked about the many faces of stress, we're sort of building in the Spark Insight series where the first session we talked about, okay, so how can we meet our porcupine selves or our porcupine child, either the child, the three-year-old that's all of a sudden having an epic hour tantrum, or the 15-year-old who just says, wake me up in June, I'm just going to sleep through this whole thing. and everything in between, the volatility of this moment, right? So in the first session, we talked about the importance of connection, staying connected. How do we do that in a way that can handle all of these big feelings? In the second session, we talked about the importance of setting limits, but being flexible during this time. And today we're going to add to that toolkit, and we're going to add in gratitude. And why is gratitude so important, especially given the volatility of the moment and our tendency to maybe porcupine a little bit? Well, part of it has to do with the role that, or the impact, the influence that gratitude has on our brain. It turns out that far from just making us just feel good, gratitude does all kinds of things for us, especially when we are under stress. So gratitude can help us cope with stress and anxiety. It does that in a couple of ways. It can increase our dopamine levels. So dopamine is sort of the happy chemical in the brain. The more dopamine I have, the happier I feel. It can increase levels of norepinephrine, which make me feel more energized, right? It helps me access feelings of calm and decreases sort of negative rumination. And all of this combined can lead to a little bit more perspective, a little bit more calm, and dare we say joy. Now, as we turn to the getting real part, we want to be careful about our expectations about what gratitude can and cannot do. But as we look for tools in our toolkit, it's clear that there's a lot of evidence and research about the importance of accessing gratitude practices during times of strain and overwhelm. And the reality is that as we look to try to take advantage of these benefits or to practice gratitude during this time, is that it's not an instant process. Dad, you want to talk a little bit about how we talk to kids about the brain in general and how it learns, but this is true for gratitude as well.
Yeah, if you've participated in any of our Spark and Stitch Institute classes or any of these webinars, you know that Aaron and I like to keep coming back to kind of looking through the lens of the brain, because we're learning a lot more about how we deal with things and react to things as we learn more about the brain. And one of the things that is real clear, a basic principle, is that the billions of brain cells that we have called neurons, one of the basic principles that we've learned from neuroscience is that, you know, the neurons, the brain cells that fire together, wire together. And that's a basic principle. And we translate that into plain English. That means that whatever the brain does a lot of is what we get good at. So, for example, how do we get good at a foreign language? Well, we practice it. How do kids get good at math? Well, they practice it. How do we get good at any sport? How do we get good at playing tennis, playing basketball? We practice. Well, practice is the English word that translates the principle. Whatever the brain does a lot of is what the brain gets good at. Well, it's not just things like athletic activities. It's not just things like, you know, mathematics skills. It also has to do with habits that we form, including, for example, gratitude. So gratitude is not something that happens automatically. Like many other things in life, gratitude is something that is learned.
And it's helpful for us to remember this, because we can start to talk about gratitude as either like there are grateful kids or ungrateful kids, or there's a grateful person or an ungrateful person. And one of the, you know, this idea of whatever the brain does a lot of is what the brain gets good at, means that as we learn what the elements of gratitude are, that we can actually start to help our children flex those muscles. And just like any kind of exercise, some days are going to be easier than others. Sometimes getting started is tricky. And when we're under stress, in particular, right, it can feel more daunting to try to access new skills, for example. And certainly gratitude is a set of skills. It's a set of habits that we learn in relationship over time. One of the models that's been helpful for us as we think about how it develops in children is to actually break gratitude down just a little bit, not because we can actually sort of map this out into concrete or very distinct steps that we have to walk through, But it can help because it can show us where, as parents, we can model it or coach it. And also thinking about ourselves as well. So we like to think of gratitude, we kind of follow this model of awareness. So simply being aware of what's around us, what are we noticing? And how do we make meaning of that outside of ourselves, right? So if I notice that, you know what, I noticed that I have food on the table 3 times a day during this pandemic because I was either able to access them from school delivery sites or because my parents were able to provide them for me, right? And then I kind of make meaning a little bit of that. Like, what does that mean in the context of, you know, how people access food or how we're taking and nourishing ourselves? And then that third part is about a kind of behavior, right? So either saying, well, thank you for this meal, or, you know, writing a letter to the meal delivery service, or any number of ways that we actually then express gratitude in a way that others can observe. And the first two parts are kind of more internal, right? It's the art of noticing, meaning making, and welcoming the goodness in a way that recognizes it, that it's not just self-generated, but that I live in the context of community, and then acting on that. The reason we wanted to break this out, again, is not because there's a perfect map for gratitude, but because as parents, especially with little kids, we oftentimes focus only on part three. So behaviors, right? We're just looking for the thank you. We're looking for the idyllic journal entry. We're looking for the things that we can look and point to and say, ah, grateful. That kid is grateful, or my child is grateful. And sometimes over-focusing on the behaviors means that we forget to help our kids notice and be aware of some of the goodness around them. We stop helping them make meaning of that. And kind of skip right to the behavior part. Now, we'll give you a couple examples of behaviors that do help, because it turns out that research does show that when we act on our gratitude, it does help us more. It's more likely to boost our mental health and provide a protective factor against worry. So behaviors are important, but when we over-focus them on them, we lose opportunities to sort of coach the other parts of this. But it's important for us to remember kind of the intricate steps of gratitude and how they develop, because we are tempted as parents often to just do this, right? And Dad, you want to talk a little bit about why, you know, this maybe isn't the best strategy.
Yeah, we can't force people to be grateful. We can't force our kids to be grateful. So, that particular strategy to try to increase it in our kids is just going to backfire. And so one of the things that I think we need to remember is that all we can do is kind of encourage it. And Aaron's going to talk about some of the steps that we can, as parents, use to kind of encourage it. But we need to remember that we can't force it. We can't order someone. Now, be grateful. It just doesn't work that way. And the problem is that it often backfires.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't know about you all, but sometimes when you're with your kids or you're with your students and you're like, I know that gratitude's helpful, or I'm actually seeing, because of the spaces of stress, I'm seeing some really ungrateful behaviors, right? So all of a sudden seeming very self-centered, very demanding, right? A lot of that source is about stress and overwhelm. And then sometimes we do just want to say, like, just be grateful. Or we use the tool of shame, which is, you know, I can't believe you're worried about this when the world is falling apart, right? And while that may be true in the grand perspective, in the grand scheme of things, this is rarely a strategy that causes a child or an adult to stop and say, oh my gosh, you're right. Now I feel centered and grateful. That we can't force kids to be grateful, but we can provide a lot of warm invitations. So as we sort of get to some practical tools here towards the end of our short session, let's do three things when we think about nurturing gratitude in children, students, and adolescents. And the first is to get real, what gratitude is and what it isn't. How do we practice and model it? And then we're going to end by talking a tiny bit about how to help kids expand their circle of concern. So we'll just do a couple of ideas in each of these. We have to get real before we can practice it and model it, lest we let the ideal get in the way of the real. Because gratitude Absolutely. There's tons of research that it can help us cope with crisis and buoy our mood. But we have to be really clear about what it isn't. It isn't instant or automatic. We've already talked about that, right? It develops over time. It is cultivated. It is a set of practices and habits. It's not something that we can download into our children and expect them to be able to practice it at all times. It's not just about behaviors and manners. So just the words thank you don't necessarily mean that children are practicing observation and meaning making, right? So there, it isn't a prescription. Just because a gratitude journal works for one teenager does not mean that it's gonna work for another. So everybody has to find their own path to the gratitude practice that fits and works for them. And just a couple more notes, these are super important as we look at the research on gratitude, is that gratitude is not about ignoring or skipping over pain, stress, or hurt. We often find gratitude when we allow ourselves to feel pain, stress, or hurt, right? Sometimes it's in the repair of that in relationship with a parent or a sibling that we are able to find some gratitude. But this isn't a way to sort of jump over the pain, the loss that young people might be experiencing right now. So a young person can be devastated that they're missing their graduation, and they can find some things in their surroundings that they are grateful for. It can be a time of both and. But we don't want to try to, gratitude is not a way to make our bad feelings go away. In fact, through our bad feelings is often where we can make meaning of them and find things to still be grateful for. It's also not a replacement, of course. Maybe this goes without saying, but it is essential during times where there are a lot of young people and adults living with mental health challenges that are escalating right now. So what we're not saying is that just because it does great things for our brain doesn't mean that if kids could just be more grateful, they wouldn't need therapy or therapeutic intervention. So this is a complementary coping strategy to some of the critical things that we know kids and families need right now. So as long as we aren't using it as a way to skip through big feelings or pain, we can start to get a little bit more real about what it looks like. And one of the things we can also get real about is to be aware of some of the developmental moments that kids are in. So one of the things we know, for example, this is just one example about teenagers, is that some, not all, teenagers engage in what we call self-serving bias, which just really means that sometimes when good things happen, a young person might think it's because of the things they did. But when bad things happen, they think it's like the world is against them. Right. And so this can be a time where we can, as we move into the coaching part of our toolkit, how do we help sort of counterbalance that with pointing out some of the gifts that young people can receive that originate outside of themselves? So once we're real, then how do we practice it and how do we model it? And we'll give you a couple of ideas and certainly stay after in order to answer a couple of questions as well.
Yep. Before we do this, though, Erin, I want to respond to a question that just came in to clarify something. The question from one of the attendees is, so should we not teach little ones to say thank you when they receive a gift? No, we certainly should. If you go back to that slide, Erin, of what it isn't, two slides back.
Let's see here. Oh, sorry.
Backward, yeah. There we go. It's not just about manners. And I think what Erin was trying to say is that gratitude is not the same thing as manners, but it's not an either or, both and are very helpful. And so teaching kids manners, teaching them to say thank you, for example, or express gratitude with a written thank you note when they get a gift is certainly very, very good parenting practice. So it wasn't that we shouldn't do that, it's that we should do both. And if we remember then that, you know, whatever the brain does a lot of is what the brain gets good at, then we want to look for ways to kind of reinforce this practice of gratitude. One of the strategies is the power of daily or weekly rituals. They can be very, very powerful because it then gives a regular opportunity for people to engage in positive practices. It kind of leads to a habit. And so, you know, some families might have, as they begin their meal, as they sit down to have a meal, they might do a practice like, you know, thorns and roses. You know, what's something good that happened today? And what was something that's hard that happened today? And they make that a regular thing. It's just an example of either a daily or a weekly ritual where it gives all of us the opportunity. A gratitude journal is another helpful strategy. There, you know, there's something very, very powerful is that when we don't just think something, but we actually write it down. And for two reasons. One, writing something down slows the process down, so it kind of seeps in a little bit more deeply. And then the other thing is that when we write something down, we're taking more ownership of it. And so a gratitude journal can be something that is very, very helpful. And then the other thing is to take advantage of one of the things that our brain does, and I call it the power of questions. Our brain, one of the things we've learned about our brains, and we've talked about this in some of the other sessions and some of the other courses, is that we have circuits in our brain that are called seeking circuits. And so we are wired to be seekers. It's a survival mechanism. We seek shelter. We seek friendship. We seek companionship. We seek information, which means that questions then become very powerful. When we have a question, our brain then goes on a searching mission to get the answer to that question. And so if our question, right now, we're under a great deal of stress in this pandemic. And if my question, when I start the day in the morning, if my question is all of the things that I have to give up, that I'm upset about because of the pandemic, then what I will keep doing is finding all of the things that make me upset. On the contrary, if I pose the question, what are things that I am grateful for, then I will literally be searching for things that I am grateful for.
And this is why part of asking a different question can be very helpful and actually kind of gets into mindfulness practice as well. If you've heard of Ellen Sanger's work, then you know that this kind of the art of actively noticing can provide a sort of counterbalance to the seeking brain. You know, if my question is everything that's wrong, I'm going to look for everything wrong. So the art of actively noticing the good around me. So this is a practice that you can introduce to your kids. Very young kids can start to do this. You can start by not even worrying about it being good, just active noticing. So notice 5 new things in the room today. This is especially helpful because we're all many of us are at home, or your kids are at home. And so we can start to feel like there's nothing new happening. But notice 5 new things about your child. Notice 5 new things about your sibling. Go outside, look for 3 new things. But trying to train the brain to look for things and then shifting that to looking for things that make you feel good, that make you feel grateful, that make you feel happy. That art of actively noticing on a daily basis can start to strengthen like a muscle where we do it more and more often. As we help our kids notice things, and this is actually in response to that same question of, you know, can we coach our kids to write thank you cards, for example, or to say thank you? Absolutely. And we can help them in those other steps as well. So there's nothing wrong with guiding the process, right? Look at the delicious food. I can tell that, you know, this is for a really young child. I can tell that you're excited about the meal, right? Think about, you know, how do you feel about it? And then asking for that behavior. So is there a way that you could let your dad know how much you like this meal that he cooked for you? So, and kids can come up with their own ways to express gratitude. So it could be saying thank you. It could be writing a card. It could be maybe making them a meal the next week, right? So there's all kinds of ways and inviting kids actively into that process. So it's not that we don't want to discourage kids from saying thank you when they receive things, but actively engaging them with, you know, how could you let them know that you appreciate that? So that they start to think about what kinds of ways that they can actually act on some of the things that they're enjoying. So with little kids, we can guide the process. With older kids, as they get older, we really want to let them lead. we do not want to say, this is what gratitude looks like and you have to do it this way. So we don't want to try, we don't want to correct our teens and how they do gratitude. This is, again, if a teen gets a gift and they say, I hate this, and they throw it at the person, that's a call for intervention. But we also, if they say, well, I think I'm going to send them this, it's like, oh no, don't do it that way. Do it my way, where you have to write a long 4-paragraph letter. Allow for them to find their way to it and expect some resistance. When we try to come too hard down on what a specific way of coping with crisis, what it should look like, especially as kids get older, they are likely to show more resistance the more that we prescribe what it should look like. And so as we wrap up, and my dad has kind of one final thought, is that this is an invitation to not just get real and allow yourself to have gratitude be messy, allow it to be a work in progress. Remind yourself that it is learned over time and that there's a lot of invisible gratitude work that your kids are doing that we don't see just in behavior, but in how they're noticing and how they're making meaning of what they're experiencing right now. And to be patient as the behaviors sometimes take time to catch up to the sort of subterranean gratitude that you're coaching and that you're modeling. And then to practice it. So to create structures and warm invitations. We just gave you a couple of examples. And then finally, this is a time where gratitude can help us expand our circle of concern. And so reminders of, we've seen this all over the internet, but every time there's crisis, Mr. Rogers tends to be the one that we can look to. But his advice of looking for the helpers is really a wonderful way for little children to expand their circle of concern, right? What are gratitude practices that little kids can engage in that are thinking about thanking the folks on the front lines, their parents who are on the front lines, caregivers, being grateful for a safe home. How can we keep all homes safe? So these kinds of thinking beyond just I'm grateful for what's in my immediate vicinity, but expanding to think beyond that. And so you'll get a recording of this short session. But one of the things that you can do as a parent is to really think about, okay, here's our little family and here's our immediate circle of concern. Maybe it's your extended family, but really look at who's kind of before the pandemic been outside my circle of concern. Maybe it's the elderly neighbor down the block that I actually haven't talked to until this happened. Maybe it's the children in my community who don't have access to learning technologies yet, but I haven't really thought about the internet and how important internet access is, right? As our kids get older, gratitude can be a time to engage them in consistently expanding that circle of concern and to think about how can I actively notice and make meaning of the things I'm grateful for and how to contribute to communities and people and networks that before this moment of crisis, I didn't take much notice of. And when we send out the recording, we'll send you some little exercises from Harvard's Making Caring Common project that can really help our kids expand that circle of concern. And Dad, do you wanna close with your final thought? I know we promised to keep these short.
When Aaron and I, when this whole, lockdown, stay at home, when all of our responses to the pandemic really kicked in, when Aaron and I decided to kind of put together this insight series, we decided let's talk about a number of topics that might be helpful for all of us because we're all in this together to kind of deal with the stress of dealing with this worldwide pandemic. And so I'd like to add one more before we finish today. Over the course of my career, I had the opportunity in the clinical part of my work spend many years working in the area of chemical dependency treatment and recovery. And one of the bits of wisdom that I really learned from that work is the importance of taking things one day at a time. When people are in recovery, one of the basic hallmarks of support groups is to take things one day at a time. And I can remember people, trying to give up cocaine, trying to, you know, to recover from alcoholism. That was such a an important part of how they enjoyed life. And as they look forward to a life with no alcohol, or look forward to a life without the drug, their drug of choice, it was completely overwhelming. Well, the only way that they could do that is kind of one day at a time. If you think ahead, it's overwhelming. And that occurred to me that we should probably remember that as we all deal with the pandemic. I received an email from a man just a couple days ago who was really thinking ahead to the next 12 to 18 months. And he has a young grandson, and his young grandson, who's just a year old, he said, I can't imagine that he will be two before I can ever give him a hug again. And my advice to him, or my feedback to him, was, you know, if we think ahead to the next year and what we might be dealing with, it could be overwhelming. Because I think one of the most difficult parts of this pandemic is we don't know exactly what the timeline is. We don't know when life is going to start to head back to any kind of semblance of normalcy. And that can be overwhelming. And so my parting thought today is that I think it would be helpful for all of us, myself included, to just kind of take one day at a time, rather than thinking ahead and feeling overwhelmed. And then coupling that with the gratitude, the power of gratitude that we've talked about today. Thank you very much for joining us. We hope that this has given you some help. As Aaron and I has put this together, it's given us some help to try to get through these very, very trying times. Please visit our website, sparkandstitchinstitute.com. Thanks for joining us, and we'll be in touch. We'll be in touch again soon.
Yeah, and I'll just pipe in to just say that I guess my dad and I's gratitude for the day is that you're juggling so much and you've carved out a little bit of your time to be with us. And so while the world might feel daunting, actively noticing these connections, even though they're virtual, is helpful. So thanks, everybody. Stay in touch. Let us know what you'd like the next Spark Insight sessions to be on, and hang in there. Thanks, everybody. Take care.